speaker this evening, our guest this evening, is Dr. Spiros Kosmidis, who's not exactly a guest because the day after tomorrow he's starting as a research fellow sponsored by the National Bank of Greece in the Hellenic Observatory for the period of 6 months. And in fact, before he even takes up his fellowship in the Hellenic Observatory, he's got his next fellowship lined up, because when he leaves here, Spiros is going on to the University of Oxford, where he's going to pick up a postdoctoral research fellowship in political science. Welcome and congratulations. And tonight, he is going to speak to us at the title of Democratic Accountability in Greece. Spiros.
Thank you very much. As you can see, we have a small technical problem. Supposedly here you would see a presentation and everything. We decided to put it on the projector so that you can have some sort of an indication of how much will it take. There is research suggesting that when you have a timer in the tube or anything, you feel better about it and you don't get any work. So we thought it would be a good idea. So basically, as Peter said, I'm going to be talking about accountability in Greece. Basically, the title on the slides that we're going to see in a couple of minutes. It's actually a bit different. By one word, it's in modern Greece. So I'm talking about the last 10, 12 years. And basically, it's a study that I'm extremely happy that I'm going to be doing this research for the next 6 months. And I'm extremely happy that I'm going to be presenting the preliminary results from what I've done in the last couple of weeks. On the topic, it's the first time actually that I'm doing something in my own country, and it's a bit less boring, to put it this way. So basically, we're talking about accountability. You know, Greece now it's in the spotlight. Everybody's thinking that our economy is bad, and it is. We think, as voters, as the electorate, that our politicians are bad. Perhaps they are. Basically, what I want to see here is I want to see whether voters are as bad as well. And basically, I want to test the interactions between the political system as we know it and the voters. So basically, this research relies heavily on numbers. Hopefully, at some point, you will see some numbers. I remember them by heart, but, PASOK's levels of support are so low, you cannot forget it right now. So it's not going to be hard to forget. Basically, what motivated this study was the initial public reaction to the crisis, right? What people would talk about when we realized that basically we cannot go out in the markets and borrow money. In the beginning, it was like, what was Papandreou thinking when he was saying that, there is money in the budget? What was Karamanlis thinking when he was calling an election? And of course, it was the infamous by now discussion by the vice president of the Greek government, Pagalos, saying that, at the end of the day, we ate the money altogether, right? Whatever we see now, it's something related to what we call in democracy collective responsibility. Whatever happens in a democracy, in theory, is related to both the politicians and the voters. Why? Because voters elect politicians. So basically, my talk today is going to be related to those things, how citizens and parties, the political system, interact in a democracy. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through some theoretical points, just to give you an idea of how I think about things, how I define a couple of terms that are being used differently in different domains or in different subfields in political science and sociology or in normative democratic theory. And then I'm going to focus a bit on the main focus of the study, which is basically accountability in economic voting, that I use it interchangeably. Basically, when I talk about accountability, I talk about economic voting. I talk about the weight the Greek electorate places on the economy when they support the government, all right, or the opposition. And of course, this is not a discussion of no interest, because it appears to be that in the next couple of months, we're going to be having an election, and it'd be nice to see basically what is going on now in the Greek electorate in the last 12 years, so that we can make some speculation about what's going to happen in the next election. Of course, I'm not going to give you any numbers on exactly what I expect, what I forecast about Dimokratos or PASOK or any of the other parties, but I think you will be having a very clear idea of what's going to happen by the end of the talk. I think these are good news. There is an inconsistency between the. Sometimes the tube comes before you expect it. So, let's see if this is ready. Sorry about that. Okay. It's the first time it appears on this computer. It might take some time. So basically, besides the election, we want to see how the future appears, and basically accept, we always accept what people tell us.
It's an international agreement.
That's the agreement. Right, is it a control and view? Is it on window?
On view, it's pretty much. Full screen mode, say, third from the view.
There it is. Right. So, you've seen that before, I was telling you about it. Okay, it's going to be slow here. No, don't do anything. Thank you. No. Right? And basically, part of the story here is we want to see how healthy or unhealthy the democratic interactions in Greece are. And of course, as I said, the next election is an important election and a very decisive decision for the Greeks for many, many reasons. Unfortunately, it's not going to be for the next 4 years, but rather for the next month before we have a new election. And basically, this is the theoretical part of the talk. How do parties and citizens interact? Basically, there is one sort of aspect of electoral politics that we are interested in here is accountability. Before that, we have the spatial theory of voting, which basically suggests that both citizens and parties, citizen parties, have preferences. For example, I like state intervention or I like free market, and there is something rational about our decision making that suggests that basically first citizens will always choose the party closest to their preferences, so I'm going to be voting for the party that advocates my own sort of worldview and things like that. And of course, because parties are smart enough, are going to be taking up policy positions to maximize their vote share. So besides citizens being rational and smart, something that we generally doubt, parties are also rational and they take up policy positions to maximize their vote share. Okay. The main focus of the study, though, is another way of looking at elections and public support and democratic interactions is the accountability model, which is much simpler, perhaps too simple sometimes, which suggests that there are two stages. First of all, voters look at policy outcomes, okay? They make a decision whether, who is to give blame to or to blame for a policy outcome. If it is good, we give credit. If it is bad, we blame. And of course, this reward and punishment is the main mechanism that basically characterizes these interactions. Okay. Now, for this project, the main idea with regard to interactions relates to economy. All right, I'm going to be focusing on the economy. And the very simple thing here is that after voters attributing the blame, what they do is they either reward for good economic outcomes, or they punish for bad ones. Okay. The interesting thing here is that because parties and governments have the incentive to, because they want to stay in power, they have the incentive to basically, maintain good economic conditions and things like that. So this is the main interaction. When you really hold the government accountable, you have something in return, right? Which is better performance, by the definition of the whole game here. And what we observe over time is economic growth. If this mechanism really holds, what you see is that the economy plays a very important role in decision making in terms of public support. Now, this is not something new, right? This theory of economic voting is so widespread that I think, general editors, when they see economic voting or accountability, they might actually say that, okay, not another one saying that the economy correlates with vote. I mean, it's so widespread that a couple of years ago, basically 10 years ago, there was one paper that said that it's over 500, 600 papers published on economic voting. So this is something that it's there. And of course, a lot of countries have had studies on their economic voting, and you always find something. You always find a correlation, right? It's relatively stable, though I have some reservations, I hold some reservations with respect to that. And of course, is informative for other types of research, electoral cycle. I mean, political economists call it political business cycle, we call it electoral cycle. The main idea is that when a newly elected government spends the first 2 months doing nothing, it's because of that honeymoon period. They then take unpopular policies, and then before the next election, they boost the economy to increase what they call the feel-good factor of the voters, and they get re-elected. That's the main sort of mechanism there. We don't find very strong evidence for that. We don't see that very often, but it's there as a theory. And as I told you, it's great for election forecasts. If we can explain, indeed, how the economy relates to public support, we would be able, in theory, to forecast what's going to happen. Of course, it's not that straightforward and easy, because it's not a deterministic forecast that it's going to be 12.3%, but it's rather a stochastic one, a probabilistic one. It is interesting, and there's a lot of work on this domain. But, as with every research program, even in this one, which is perhaps the most successful one in empirical political science, there are problems, right? And these problems mostly relate to this idea that the context matters, right? It's not everywhere the same. We have different sort of countries, we have different sort of political environments, different institutional arrangements that basically tend to influence what we call the clarity of responsibility. How clear it is for voters to attribute the blame or the credit, okay? So basically what you see and what is important here is that, for example, the electoral system plays an important role. If your electoral system promotes coalition governments, then it's more difficult for a voter to actually say it's Merkel's fault or it's the Free Democrats' fault for what's going on in Germany right now, for example. Or similarly, if you have a minority government, or the typical example from U.S. politics, where you might have a Democratic White House, but in the lower chamber you have a Republican Senate, for example, and what you see is that you don't know who to blame. It's more difficult. Greece belongs to those countries where you have clear attribution of blame, right? You have one-party governments, you know who did what, and in theory you should be seeing a lot of economic voting there, okay? The third aspect of contextual sort of conditionality, as they call it, is globalization, right? While in the beginning, in the 70s or the 80s, it would be interesting to see that, to say that, okay, the economy plays a role because governments have a lot of space and room to maneuver the national economy. After the 90s, and especially after the 2000 decade, this has changed a lot. So things like trade openness or membership to supranational organizations suppress the level of economic voting. Voters think that it's not up to my government to bring about economic policy. Okay, it's an international sort of thing, globalization. And this is something to remember for what we're going to see later on in the models. The additional problems relate to this idea here, so why we don't see economic voting sometimes and everything. There is an asymmetry in reward and punishment. People are better at punishing rather than rewarding. So basically what you see is that when you have a good economy, okay, the president is doing well, but if the economy is bad, there's no chance for re-election, all right? It's very unlikely that you're going to win an election when the economy is bad. The other thing, and it goes to the individual level and not to the electorate level, is basically that, you know, voters are not that smart at the end of the day. They're not keen observers of the economy and politics. They have better things to do very often, okay? And you shouldn't be having expectations about their responsiveness to what's going on in reality. The other thing, which is also important at the individual level here, is what we call, what the literature calls, partisan perception bias. Basically, as an individual voter, you have preferences, you have what we call political identities, you feel more closer to one of the rival parties, and you, when you're being asked in an opinion poll, what do you think the economy is going to do next year, you basically, if you support the government, you're going to say you're going to be more optimistic. If you don't support the government, you're going to be pessimistic. And this is quite an important problem because it brings about this statistical term, a very nice term called endogeneity. Basically, it's not economics driving party support. It's rather party support driving economic perceptions, right? And this is a very important problem that hopefully with the research design I have is going to be, I'm going to overcome because I'm going to be using objective economic indicators, okay? The level of employment, the level of inflation, and not perceptions of economic confidence. And having said that, the other good thing is that we're going to be using aggregate data. I'm not going to be using individual level data, basically. I'm not going to be using the opinion polls stratified by individual respondents, but rather the proportions. So how many people are willing to support PASOK or New Democracy in the next election, and so on and so forth. Okay. The data is quarterly, public opinion and voting intentions from 2000 to 2011, so fairly recently, until the last reading was November 2011, which is quite close to where we are now, and there's going to be another one in March, I think by the end of March. We're going to be having one more observation, which is always nice. This is based on face-to-face interviews employing a ballot box method to measure voter intention. Basically, they go to households with a box, ballot box, and the respondent goes there and they have to put the envelope, their ballot there. So it's quite reliable what we get. And of course, it was commissioned, it was meta-analysis that did all the fieldwork there. And of course, I have to thank Stratos Panaras and Penny Apostolopoulou for sharing their data. It was quite hard to get big data, actually, so I'm really thankful. And basically, this is what the dependent variable looks like. As you would guess, the green line is PASOK, the blue line is New Democracy. This is voting intention stratified by the two parties. I don't have the rest of the parties, as you can imagine. New parties appear, especially in that period here, and it's difficult to model them. But we have the two governing parties. As you can see, from 2000 to 2004, we have a PASOK government, okay? And from 2004 to 2009, there is a New Democracy government, and then we have George Papandreou's term in office until the last sort of observation here. The fourth quarter of 2011, where Lukas Papadimos took over. Right. For keen observers of Greek politics, there are some scandals and events. It's always nice to look at them. My favorite is the Olympics and the year 2004, because it gives a very important increase in public support for New Democracy. We don't know whether it's the games themselves or just the honeymoon effect over there, but it's always interesting to see where do we place more weight as an electorate. Over here we have the IMF vote, and you can see the decline for PASOK right after its election. For New Democracy as well, we have a split in the party after a while, with the Democratic Coalition creating a faction and a new party with Dora Bogoyani. And basically, just to return to the research design, what I'm going to be doing here, because what I want to see is we want to see how the objective reality explains the variation in those two series for the governing party. There's going to be some time series regression analysis, very simple, and hopefully you're not going to be lost there. I'll try to explain as much as possible. The main idea is this one here, that government support is a function of its past, so T minus one over here, plus the levels of unemployment at the same quarter, inflation at the same quarter, a counter variable that basically measures the consecutive time in office. So for every quarter that the party stays in office, in addition, you have one more in addition to that number. And when it is voted out of office, it returns to zero. Okay, this is straightforward. And of course, an index of political events, the ones that I showed you previously, all those taken together, plus an error term, because you cannot do the regression without an error term. And we love the error term. And basically, the main hypothesis that we're going to be testing here about the real economy, basically unemployment and inflation, suggests that the coefficients, basically what you see as beta, beta 1, beta 2, so beta 2 and beta 3 are negative. Okay, this is what we want to see. Because it basically suggests that an increase in unemployment, all right, which is bad, brings about a decline in party support. All right, so this would be a healthy mechanism. Just to make it clear with respect to unemployment, we expect this to be negative, or to put it differently, increase in unemployment should be associated with decreases, with a decline in governing party support. Now, before I move to the actual table that tests this hypothesis, time series modelers are like astrologists in some sense. So we do a bit of stargazing before we predict the future. And when you see a star in this output, in this table, it's something good. All right? It means that basically the coefficient we have is significantly different from zero. Basically, there is an impact, to put it broadly. And the main model is tested in column 3 over here. And what we see is that much of the variance in the dependent variable has been explained by its past. There is some serial correlation there in the variable, not in the residuals. And of course, the economic voting sort of component of the model, basically unemployment and inflation, provide mixed results. Inflation doesn't play a role for a plausible reason. I mean, you know, even in crisis, inflation doesn't go up. Right, it has to do with demand, with wages, and things like that. But unemployment does play a significant role, and negative, as expected. All right, negative. An interesting theme here: the model on column 3 and 4 are the same, with the only difference being that instead of having the index of political events explaining party support in Greece, what I have is a dummy variable, basically 0 or 1, for the period of the Olympic Games and the year 2004, which basically suggests that this event gave New Democracy four percentage points. Right? This is the Hahnemann effect. While unemployment at the same time suggests this coefficient that, you know, every time a point, we have a point increase in unemployment, what we see is a 0.6 decrease in party support. And this is interesting. However, so we'll be happy now, go home and think everything is great in Greece, we have healthy democratic interactions, and we should be very happy, and everything works as it should be. Well, to be honest, before I estimated all those things, I was predisposed. And I always thought that it cannot be that the Greek electorate is good at holding the government accountable. So I was a bit skeptical, and I had to do a bit more tests. And basically what I wanted to see is whether this thing is robust, whether it takes place across time. Would we expect that at different time points, the correlation we see is representative of the 12-year period we test here? Is it stable across time? Is it constant or dynamic? These are the questions that basically I had in my head. And even though there are a couple of interesting methods to pursue these questions, I use the easiest one, basically. I estimated a rolling regression, basically a moving window regression, to estimate the coefficient over time, basically to see whether economic voting is stable across the 12-year period we have. And just to explain how things are going to work here, what we have in this thing is... This will work. It does. Okay. Nothing works. Like the great democracy, isn't it? So basically, what you see here in those three lines, all right, is the actual coefficient we saw on the table, the actual impact of the economy on the vote, which is negative, And here we hypothesize that it is constant, right? That it doesn't have, it doesn't move across time. Of course, here we have the time series. The main idea is that if you want to see a significant impact, none of those lines, the confidence intervals as we call them, should be above or below zero. They shouldn't include a zero, right? And basically, when you actually extract the coefficient over time, with some heroic assumptions about the dynamic nature of the data, this is what you see. So this is economic voting in Greece. And basically, this is against theoretical prediction. Over here, what you see is positive economic voting, that is, increases in unemployment, over here, for example, or over here, bring about increases in public support, in party support, which is against prediction. The reason, I don't know, to be honest. What we see is that this coefficient I reported previously is based, is being driven by one particular period, and this is the IMF period. Economic voting becomes apparent during the IMF period over here, the last year. Right? The last year. Is it going to fall? No. And, of course, this is important not only for Greece, that suddenly we started holding the government accountable or anything like that. It's a bit more complex. Just to give you an idea, which I think suggests a similar thing, is that, you know, new democracy is not related, support for the democracy in general in the 12-year period is not related to any of the economic indicators. Well, PASOK is related to both unemployment and inflation, right? Now, this is something to consider because it's a bit, I mean, to me it was unexpected, at least. The first thing you think about it is this asymmetry in reward and punishment. So basically, because in the last year we had such a huge increase in unemployment, people started punishing, right? And it could be that actually the savings of the economy in the media or in the discussions or in general basically brought about this sort of deactivated this mechanism in the collective decision making of the Greek electorate. But in any case, it raises a lot of concerns, not only for Greece, but in general, primarily theoretical. Just to conclude a bit here and talk about the concerns we have, is that even though we have some evidence of accountability in Greece, economic voting is evident only during the last year, right? Or so. The other thing is that even though this is important for Greece and everything, it's also important for the way we think about accountability in general, right? If you recall what we talked previously about, the globalization hypothesis, okay, that basically economic voting tends to be suppressed because governments do not have any room to maneuver the economy, right? So basically the smaller the room to maneuver the national economy, the lower the levels of economic voting. What we see here is rather surprising. It brings about a Greek paradox, as always. Right? If economic voting is a sign of healthy democratic interactions, basically, it is really surprising that it's being heightened during a period when Greece's national sovereignty is on hold. Not only national sovereignty, the room to maneuver the national economy in the last year has been zero. Okay? There's no elected representative that said that we're going to do this. It didn't get an X from the IMF. And the ECB. And of course, just to finish this presentation, I'm just wondering, would it be a post-mortem act of punishment? So would it be that actually Greeks suddenly said, okay, for the last 30 years they've been doing whatever they used to do, let's punish them now? I don't know, to be honest. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for also sorting out the technical difficulties. I'm sure that some of the things you showed up there would have been very difficult to explain without some diagrams.
You accepted.
Speaking from a position of economic ignorance, that's all. Over to you. Questions, comments? That's interesting.
So we have some sort of not very... I'll try to keep the questions not very technical, that's what.
No, that was great.
And The conclusion you arrive at seems like really a paradox, you know, what happens and how can economic voting rise in a period of reduced sovereignty and impact on policy and stuff. But I have on the graph with the rolling coefficient, it seems to me that because the coefficient is always above, or almost always above, the central estimate, there must be something in the estimation which sort of calls misspecification, immediate variables or whatever. So obviously when this preliminary results and you're going to look at, but I suspect that the paradox will not survive, a better specification. Of course, on the other hand, if you explain everything, then, you know, there's no paradox to explain. I mean, you know, if you explain everything away, there's no variation to capture. What I want to ask is whether is the kind of theory of economic voting or whatever, is it about current economic performance, or because you have high frequency data, you know, quarterly unemployment. And sometimes you are referring to things like, you know, people responding immediately to a rise in unemployment, and some other times you are referring to the concept of, you know, if the economy has done well over this some period, which is more than a quarter, then I will reward the party, the governing party. So my question is, what does the theory say? Are they talking about high frequency, month to month, whatever changes, or are they talking about, you know, delivery of performance over 4 years or whatever? And then what is your, if you're going to look at the long term performance picture, and if you expect to find something different than what you found for the quarterly data?
So basically, let me start with a rolling coefficient. Let me start by saying that if I had a bit more data, I mean, 10 time points more, I would do something different. It's what we call a DCC model by Robert Engel, dynamic conditional correlations, that takes into account volatility. But this is too technical, I'm not going to get into that. I have used different specifications, and the trade-off there is that when you add a variable, because you lose degrees of freedom, you lose a lot of time in the moving windows. So basically, you need to make a decision there. And with all the specifications, the ups and downs before 2011 do vanish sometimes. So when you control for an election or for some events, they do come close to zero, basically with smaller confidence intervals. Yet the paradox is there. We see economic voting in the last 4 quarters. And this is not only from the graph. This is something I experimented with the model specification and the estimator a lot to make sure that what we see is actually there. And basically, even in the hardest sort of tests, this thing would survive at the end. But sometimes this...
But formally speaking, you have simultaneity. Yes, yeah? So something exogenous...
Yeah.
Affects the popularity of PASOK, and
right.
Something exogenous creates unemployment.
Yeah.
You see a correlation between the two, and you call it voting.
Yeah.
But actually, there's a crisis. You know, so it's
yeah.
not economic voting. It's not the attitudes of people. It's that something happens that affects those two things simultaneously.
But of course, the interaction of those two things is basically accountability. It's not actually accountability. I agree with you, because at the end of the day, it's crisis, and of course. It's only partly accountability because of the punishment thing, all right? Otherwise, you wouldn't see, it would be that, okay, you know, it's the IMF doing everything, we shouldn't be punishing PASOK and the democracy, so their levels should be at the same as they were before. So there is something there. There is economic voting there. It's not the way we thought about it, because of course, in Western democracies, all the studies in economic voting relate to, you know, tranquility, basically, and, levels of unemployment and inflation that are manageable. What we see in Greece is rather different. And of course, there's something there, and I agree with you. And what I really wish is two things, basically. If I had data before 2000, to see before the Eurozone entrance, what was the story there, and to have perhaps 4 or 5 quarters ahead of time from now to see whether this thing continues working like this. What was the other question about reward?
The time lag.
Yes, so whether this instantaneous response to change in unemployment.
Yeah. Well, it depends. The same model with the lag level of unemployment performs well, as well actually. Some of the.
But I mean, when the theorists talk, sorry, to, when the theorists talk about economic voting, do they refer to current economic performance,
sure.
You know, to what the government did in its time?
Well, as I said in the theoretical part, basically we have two sort of strands there. We have those looking at survey responses aggregated, where we have either prospective, how the economy is going to look like, the feel-good factor, basically, and retrospective. How do you think the economy has been in the last 12 months? And you vote on that. But there you have this problem of, endogeneity, right? And I generally prefer using objective indicators. And if it has to do with some lag in the whether it's contemporaneous or the long run impact, I'd say that I tried to estimate a model that could actually look at that, but I couldn't. It didn't work out at the end. An error correction. Finally, yeah, when we use lags of unemployment and inflation, we have the same results. Smaller, but the same.
Why not incomes as an independent variable, I suspect. I suspect because we don't have quarterly data. But that's Hamlet without the prince in the model of economic voting. And that relates also to your inflation variable. Without having money wages to compare at the same time, you don't get inflation itself is not meaningful. So I'm not surprised you don't get a significant result for that. But Hamlet without the prince, I think, yes. Or Acropolis without the Parthenon.
I basically about the inflation indicator, I totally agree with you. And there are so many things you can control for to see whether they relate to party support, like objective indicators, and increasing income would be interesting. But I don't think we have quarterly data. I think I should go about and see everything. As there was a slide that I took out, and I said it's not only unemployment and inflation. What we could see, especially in the period where the Greek paradox starts, right, the last couple of years, is the spread of the 10-year bond to see whether this had a different sort of impact on party support. Basically, whether it's not actually accountability, as Vasily said, but it's rather the crisis and the public reaction to the crisis with respect to voting behavior.
Yeah, I think
the problem with public opinion data is that not exactly measuring intention to punish or reward, right? Because it also very much depends on the electoral cycle, as you said. The actual intention to punish or reward comes at the ballot, right, at the time of the election. When someone like answers a poll question in the middle of a term, you might also want to signal an intention to vote down the party so they can change their policies or their performance. And that also has to do with whether you're actually measuring valence or policy, right? And I'm not sure how the question is worded in this case, whether it's a measure of policy positions or the performance or competence of the governing party. So I guess in this sense, you might also want to control for the distance from the next election or the timing within the electoral cycle. And I guess another point is that you might also want, on the technical note, you might want to detrain the data and you'd make some cubic splines.
That final thing is interesting. I think I might do that. Basically, what we have, the dependent variable is voting intention. Is the percentage of people intending to vote for PASOK or New Democracy if they were in general election tomorrow. And I kind of said it, discussed that.
So, when they're asked in the houses and the surveyors are going around, they were asking no other questions other than voting intention.
There was a questionnaire, normal one, as you would do in an opinion, the voting intention question to purge it from social desirability.
So, there would be other data?
Yeah, there is some other data. There is some other data. There is data about party identification. There is data about what I said previously, prospective economic economic prospections and retrospections and things like that. Yeah, there is some data, but they don't start in 2000; they start in 2004, I think. But I think I'm gonna leverage all the available data sets out there. So returning to what you said, it's a whole intention thing. So basically, it's not about valence or position, right? It has to do with decision. It's an intention to vote. The economy on its own is a typical valence. So it's got a, do you deliver? Yes. If you don't, I punish you. Right? This is the main idea. But what you're saying there, that it could be that over the electoral cycle, what we have is people, you know, drinking wine or ouzo in their sofas and saying, okay, the economy is not bad, but let's see how things are going to be. I'm going to vote for this guy. And then when the actual mechanism of accountability, so the real ballot box appears, then you have the real sort of thing. What I've done, the only thing I've done, and I had it in the estimation, is I had a control for electoral quarters, if there was an election in the quarter of the interview. That was the only thing I did in relation to that. But I like the...
I mean, incumbent party support always dips in the middle of the electoral cycle and then it rises like towards the end, right?
So yeah. In advanced industrial democracies, not in Greece.
Two questions. First, about unemployment. So you try to correlate unemployment with the popularity of participants of the trend.
Yeah.
So the projection would be that as unemployment increases, the popularity of parties will decrease. Mm-hmm. And you find an inconsistency there, which indicates that there is not an economic voting because of the trend. My question is, the first question is as follows. Concerning unemployment in Greece, the figures that we have, or that we had up until recently, we are not sure if they are the actual ones, right? So there might be an issue there, which means that even if unemployment figures were high, this means that actually some people have found a way to get by.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that for all these periods up until the crisis, the mentality of Greeks, and I'm coming to the second point, is, well, okay, we're getting by, therefore, that's okay, we can keep on, you know, living the way that we live, we can keep on voting the way that we are because we can get away with it. But after the crisis, they realize that for objective reasons, this cannot happen anymore, which means that their behavior, including voting behavior, has to change because they are affected from the economic crisis, which is actually real. They cannot fake it anymore. If they are unemployed, they are unemployed, end of the story. But I was wondering, the thing is that this mentality cannot be quantified, or could it? I really don't know, you will answer that. But yeah, the main concern is whether unemployment, well, actually, if there is an issue with unemployment here.
With a measure?
Yeah.
I think there certainly is one. I mean, Greek statistics, after all. The thing is that what people get in their tellies is the numbers they give them. It's not actually being unemployed and how it correlates with party support, is how much unemployment is in the nation, and what you see is what you get at the end, right? And I mean, of course, I understand what you're saying there, that you didn't have to hold the government accountable in the beginning, because you know you could get by at the end of the day, and suddenly we cannot get by, so we need to do something. It could be, basically, this is the story of life loss. To put it this way. About the Greek statistics, who knows? I mean, who really knows? I mean, there was the director of the Greek Statistical Service, and they were I don't know, laid off because they said the truth. It's really weird to talk about Greek statistics, but the way you think about the whole mechanism is there. The only difference is that actually is not being unemployed and how high is the probability of being voting for the government, is your perception of unemployment in general, how many unemployed are out there, right?
Just to add something, that if the mismeasurement is consistent over from quarter to quarter, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
So you may get it 100% of, like, instead of 10, you count 20, or the other way around. If you do that consistently over, you know, quarter after quarter, the result is going to be identical in the regression.
Yes, but then it's not an indication of whether unemployment is an issue, because it's a big issue. You see, if there isn't unemployment there...
Oh, but this is about sort of saying, you know, if unemployment increases, then you have an effect. It doesn't explain the level of support that changes.
Yeah, it doesn't explain how much support you have. What is the actual relationship between two variables? What is the characterization of this relationship? And, I mean, the coefficient estimate is well in line with the general anticipation that there is some economic volume. Now, if you see the difference between actual economic voting estimates in Europe or in the US, this is quite low. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I've got a list of other people, at least four questions, so what else?
Yeah. Just out of interest, what is the sample size? Because that's important, and who comprises the sample? I mean, work out in this country, for example, the constituency average size 64,000. If you want a really accurate opinion poll in that sample, in that you know, that number, then you want probably between 1,200 and 1,500. Certainly, you know, that's so in a country the size of Greece, you know, you probably need a pretty high sample, and also how that sample is comprised. I mean, I think that's important. The second thing, I mean, the thing about unemployment statistics has already been covered, but it's not a uniquely Greek paradox. I can say, as a former elected politician in this country, one only has to look at the 1983 election, which was a landslide for the governing party, which has successfully decimated manufacturing industry in the previous 4 years. In my own constituency, I had male unemployment of 30% in two of my four towns, and yet I won easily. So, you know, it's, as I say, the other factors come into play, and I think you're right about reward and punishment, but you tend to punish governments. You don't necessarily reward oppositions. I mean, leaders of the current one in this country will go through exactly the same phase every 6 years. They're unelectable, they're hopeless, and they'll never win. And as Margaret Thatcher proved, they do sometimes. So I think that's important. Just one final thing I'd say, I would never dare as a former politician say that the electorate aren't smart, but Adlai Stevenson was once told that he was a thinking man's candidate, and his response was, yes, but I need a majority.
Now, let me start by adding, you said something about unelectable politicians. I think Michael Foot is included in this sort of group of people who was the labor
extreme case.
Yeah, the labor leader. Which I kind of like for a reason. The thing about the 1983 election that there was a war a couple of months before. And
you still won in 87. Okay, by reduced, but you still won in 87 with a much more capable opposition.
And a much better economy.
Together.
Hmm? And a much better economy.
Well, not really. But certainly unemployment in my area hadn't.
Yeah. I agree with you. And especially, you know, there is this partisan effect there. When you have conservative governments, what matters is inflation. When you have socialist governments, what matters is unemployment. You have this thing. But about Thatcher, I mean, there's a lot of work on economic voting during the Thatcher era, and there is very strong economic voting.
Surely the crucial thing, I think, about the data that you've got, it shows the PASOK's obviously steep decline, and Nea Dimokratia's obviously hasn't recovered, because I think the electorate are quite rightly blaming a plague of both your houses, which also, of course, calls into question, really, why have an election at this stage? Why not just follow the Italians and stick with the technocrats?
Yeah, that's a question we need to discuss, I think.
Could you answer the other question about the sample size?
1,200 to 1,400.
Sorry?
1,200 to 1,400. Mm-hmm. The actual, it was a three-stage quota sample. It's what we do in Greece.
And actually, I
really trust this company. I'm not related to it. And what else? Water sophistication. Yeah, I agree with you. On the comment.
And you get regional variation.
Certainly.
So, I'm coming at this from a layman's perspective. I guess the voter sophistication plays a role. But when I read the Greek paradox and look at things, the economic voting is a sign of health. Democratic interactions. I don't see the surprise that is heightened during a period as Greece is in today, when, as from the voter's perspective, the decision of voting today has such a more larger impact than it is as voting in the previous elections. And I understand, I mean, the correlation of unemployment, if one agrees with that or not, matters. But isn't there a factor to control for where there actually the impact of one's decision to vote for which party matters a lot more during certain times than it does in others.
That's very interesting. Basically, what might link the final point and yours about the decisiveness of the next election, and basically what we might observe in the next election is a bit of strategic behavior on behalf of the voters. If there is a possibility of a coalition, or you know, discussions about a coalition, you might see voters voting against their sincere sort of intentions just to be pivotal with respect to the coalition formation after the actual election. Now, as I said to Athanasia previously, all elections up to now were different. What we're going to see in April or May, probably May, is going to be the first time where we will have to make important decisions. All right? Of course, every politician will say this is the most important election that we're facing. In 2000, it was about the Eurozone and the Olympic Games. In 2004, it was about restructuring the Greek society, the Greek public sector. It's still the same. The Greek public sector is the same, by the way. In 2009, it was about some sort of a weird change in belief that I never realized. It's always going to be important. The thing is, the healthiness of democratic interaction is something that basically allows you to say that, no, we're not going to see that in 2012. We don't need an important election. We need ordinary elections where people propose policies, voters are informed and sophisticated, and they cast their ballots as they should be doing. That's my opinion, at least.
Thank you. My main issue, I suppose, it comes back to what Afanasia said. When you talk about the health of the economy as influencing voting, I can't really understand what is the economy that influences. Is it GDP growth? Is it unemployment? Is it competitiveness? Is it? I mean, I would expect to hear something about the Greek particularities in respect with accountability, related with clientelism, for example, how clientelism affects accountability in Greece. And I accept that we always have to make assumptions in order to prove something, but I think that I probably come from a different theoretical background, but I find that the assertion the economy influences voting a fairly broad one, and particularly as far as Greece is concerned. Where, as Athanasia said, I think the 10 years ago, when supposedly the Greek economy was booming, and they kept complaining about their situation. Exactly. I know people now that earn 4,000 euros, and they complain about their situation. You know. So
that's how it works. They will always complain. The thing is that they have to make a decision. And it's not about the health of the economy. It's about the health of the interaction between the economy and public support. What we want to see is whether there is a relationship. If there is a relationship, this is something good. It cannot be bad, right? If you look at the economy and you see that there is a change in public support, of course, in a theoretically plausible way, this is something good. This is something healthy. It's not about the economy itself. The Greek economy is not healthy. Let's put it this way. Let that be the starting point. The important comment you make is about clientelism. This is extremely important, right? If you listen to stories from parents, grandparents, what they say is, I voted for this guy because, you know, he gave me a job in the public sector. And I'm going to be voting for those guys because they gave me a permanent position for the rest of my life and I make good money. Of course, I cannot tax evade. But, you know, sometimes I also do that. It's great. We live in a great country. We have islands. But it's not like that. When you're talking about democracy, it's not like that. And basically, it could be that what you're actually saying is what we see in the models. This idea that it's not the actual economy, but whether the member of the parliament is going to give me a job in the public sector. So it doesn't matter what Simitis did or what Karamanlis did or what Papandreou did, is that basically, I'm going to be okay because the MP from Corinthos or from Kefalonia is going to give me a job. It also could be the case that what we see in terms of the paradox is that, you know, we know it's not going to happen anymore. All right? It could be the case. But I think that Planeta is a great way to tackle this relationship. Unfortunately, I cannot account for it. How can I account for it in the 12-year period? Especially if, you know, 50% of appointments were made in 1981 and 1985. I hate when I say it.
Yeah. Indirectly, like tourism and creation.
Yeah, well, the thing is, sorry about that, if you look at the partisan affiliation now, I think it correlates with party support by 0.95. It's almost the same. In the last opinion poll, PASOK had 11%. Partisans were 11%.
For support.
Yeah. Kevin. That suggests that potentially we're looking at the wrong thing. Partisan affiliation, you're dealing with a model of sophology which is recent, fashionable, etc. We all grew up as political science students looking at party loyalty, party identification models. We have here something where, in good times, people apparently are not voting on economic grounds. In one intense period of the recent past, they appeared to be. But as you refer to the forthcoming election, we see not only the decimation of the governing party, but the main opposition party, clearly not benefiting the like of which we would have previously expected. So I do wonder whether it's economic voting we should be looking at, or whether there's something else here. If after the next election, as the opinion poll suggests, there's going to be some tremendous transformation of the party system, how could we sustain a model there? Yeah, that kind of thing. I was wondering.
This is November. This is December, sorry.
I saw earlier that your presentation had 19 pages and we've seen 17 of them, so thank you for tantalizing us. How could you interpret after the election that economic voting had been preeminent? So I just wonder, I'm going back to the point as to whether we're looking for something else. I take the points raised before about data, the spread of data. But should we conclude on this exceptional 2-year period, over the 12 years where a hypothesis has been sustained, I wonder whether we should be looking at something else that has caused it rather than economic factors. And I don't know whether that's got to do with attitudes towards, obviously it has something to do with the attitudes towards the crisis, but attitudes towards citizenship and the state, politics, participation, etc. We've seen in these last two years also growth of other kinds of political activity. And so it does make you wonder whether the notion of citizen and state is changing. And that isn't easily equated with economic voting. It's something else.
Well, let me start by saying it's not only economic voting.
Mm.
Economic voting explains one portion.
So the proposition has got to be it's primarily economic voting, otherwise.
Yeah. The good thing would be that it's primarily economic voting. And basically, first of all, about new democracy, okay? They don't gain from the punishment of PASOK.
Mm.
Because voters think that they should be punished as well. I mean, they're part of the story.
Mm.
That's obvious.
But the punishing them, therefore, surely for non-economic reasons. It's in the inheritance of the nature of the state, the corruption, clientelism, all of those things.
Yeah. It could be that this crisis basically uncovered many things that we prefer to hide under the carpet or anything. Something like that. I think that what you're saying about citizenship and the way we understand participation, whether this participation is conventional in the manner that we go and we cast a ballot every 4 years, or is it something non-conventional, like burning down Athens every once in a while? This is important. This is important. This is part of the story, I'm sure. But what we need to see is what's going to happen in Greece in the next couple of years, in terms of not only its economy, but how... what we have now in Greece is a very problematic democracy. Okay? You have a prime minister who is not elected. At least he has the support of the parliament, but he is not elected by the people.
The people don't elect prime minister.
Sure, that's true, but I think there's a huge, a vast literature suggesting that, you know, the candidate for a prime minister plays an important role in party support. So we cannot, personally, we didn't know before 2009, this is not normal. What we have now is not normal. And it should be recovered, right? Of course, what we have is the democratic recovery and the national recovery. And with respect to what you said, is it actually a good idea to have an election now for the national recovery? No, it's not a good idea. For democracy, we need to have an election. Okay, otherwise, the non-conventional ways of participating in politics are going to increase. And we need to buffer that, we need to stop it, right? We need to give legitimacy to the political system in some way, and elections are one way. Of course, the actual consequence of what we're going to see is that we're not going to be voting for the next 4 years, but for a month. Until Samaras and Papandreou and Venizelos are going to be trying to figure out what they're going to do. We might have Aleta Papariga for a prime minister, which means €1,500 minimum wage, which is great. And 60% unemployment in the next 2 months.
60,000 drachmas.
Thank you.
Okay. So my question is, would you think that the level of the black economy would be a variable worth an index study to include in your model, and principally to explain the inconsistencies of your model?
Well, what do you mean by
black economy, submerged economy?
Yeah.
I mean, people unemployed normally have their own means in the black economy.
Yeah, true. There could be something there. There could be something. If there was, basically, the idea was like that. If there was a lot of black economy in the past, and you would see no reaction to the real economy in terms of party support, and suddenly this thing stops by an invisible hand, and then you suddenly see economic volume, there could be something. And when you model time series, there are lots of inconsistencies that you cannot tap into. I mean, you can not model everything. If you were able to model everything, there would be something fundamentally wrong with what you're doing. That's why we love the error chart. But I think it's part of the story. Clientelism, black economy, I think it's part of the story, and it would be great if we had something to include there. Bear in mind, before we go there, the picture right now is totally different from December. Just to understand the amount of change. Not only we have a new party coming out from New Democracy, called Independent Greeks or something, we have a new party coming out of PASOK as well in the next couple of weeks. And it's going to be really nice. It's great to be a psychologist in this election. Things to wonder.
Just to take the previous point a little bit further, could it be that all this support that the two big parties have lost is not because of economic voting or anything like that? Maybe it is because people have realized that even if they do vote, the best of intentions and the highest of causes, that with snap of the finger, a technocrat government might come up, like Greece has, Italy has. So if Portugal goes wrong, they will have a technocrat. Spain goes wrong, they will have technocrats. So at the end of the day, maybe it doesn't even matter anymore.
Could be.
If you take that into account, then
I cannot take that into account statistically, but again, if that's the case, what we should be observing is no economic voting. What we observe is economic voting in the last quarters, right? So there is a contradiction there. We would expect that voters don't pay attention to anything, and what goes on is rather different than there's going to be Mario Monti or Papadimos or the Portuguese equivalent
taking over.
Sorry to interrupt you, but there was a poll like a month ago that it was saying that actually Papademos, if he created a party, he would be second. You don't have it anywhere there, but
now it's third. Now it's third.
So that means, that tells me that they do actually have lost all faith in whoever. So it doesn't even matter anymore. I mean, it does. When the whole system like collapses, everyone collapses with it. Whether it's finance, politics, social, anything. So, economic voting does hold. But is that the vision? That comes first. Is
it's second. There are other priorities, I guess, in those events. Let me tell you, you're saying that the two parties have lost their support. There is a reason for that. They've been in office for the last 40 years. Right? So people have lost faith, as you said, which is important. Now, related to what Kevin said previously about party identification and party labels, Papademos has this nice characteristic that he's not related to any of those parties. So he cannot be blamed for many things, right?
Is he not?
Okay, he was
with Simitis. He was the one that introduced us to Europe. Everyone knows that. So how come he is not? I mean, that's the thing. That's my question. He is related. Everyone knows that he is related. And even though he has an utmost trust, which he doesn't deserve. Because he's a technocrat.
Okay.
Only by label.
The first thing is that Papademos doesn't have the same support as he had in November.
No.
That's the first thing. Papandreou had a huge support when he was elected, and otherwise he didn't have anything. And he was the son of the founder of this party. Right? He had a party label on his forefront. This is what happens with politicians. When you enter an office, people are happy and dissatisfied. But then, after a while, when you build that record in office, there's a decline. To be honest, we need to wait a bit about what they're saying. I think it's interesting because if you see the last observation in the data set was the whole Petsalonikos fiasco and Papademos taking over at the end. It might be that we need to wait to see how this thing has stabilized. And on the other hand, I don't think that we'll have enough time to actually test what you're saying because there's going to be an election. And when there's an election, what happens is that there is polarization, at least it used to be that, like that, polarization, and the party support of both parties will increase. I mean, apart from what we are saying about punishment and reward, New Democracy and PASOK have very strong grassroots, right? They can mobilize. No other party can mobilize like that. And when an election is there, you will see a lot of people swinging back to where they came. I think it was one of the comments, you know, during the off-election period, people just stand there and they look at the news and they do things. They don't really care about what's going on. It could be that they will return. My prediction is not that much as in the past. We're not going to be seeing it returns.
I thought that was delicately put. Not as much as in the past. Surely the number of people who are willing to self-identify as PASOK at the moment would be a declining figure.
11.
Yes. So it may be
on the Ministry of Finance.
Yeah, it may be that there is a wonderful map of cells of people waiting to come out, but on the other hand, it might not. What would prove your hypothesis wrong?
In what sense?
What shows that economic voting is not relevant? I'm saying this because, as I understand it, the data suggests that there's economic voting to some extent for the last 2 years. This isn't economic voting, this graph, is it?
This is a voting tension in December.
In the sense of a spread of party support and new parties.
Yeah.
So when would you conclude, or what would lead you to conclude that we need another theory?
First of all, I don't even imagine myself saying that economic voting doesn't hold.
Why not?
Because I think 95% of academicians would say this guy's crazy. Of course, they haven't seen good data yet. Well, I think that this is something that you keep on going back to and you test it, and you want to be as explicit as possible to see when you have economic volume, why did you have economic volume, why you had in this period, why not in the other one. And basically, with regard to what I presented here, what we see is that, I mean, the actual conclusion is, let's wait a bit and see how this is going to work out, because it is obscure. It's not, to me, it's not reasonable. It's there statistically.
Not logical.
It's not logical, right? At some points it is, at some points it isn't, but it's a paradox. It shouldn't be like, at least in terms of theory. You know, all this research that relate data and analysis, you always need to go back and see what's wrong, what is going on. Right? For many, many years, we used to think that the world works like that, and suddenly you have a structural change, and everything changes, right? And, you know, you just discuss it in the literature. Back then in the 1970s, nobody knew in 1974 that the oil crisis would change how we think about the world. This is just an example. But it did change. So we are on top of the crisis, right? We don't know what's going to happen in the future. We know in terms of party support, but we don't know in terms of the relationship between the economy and voting.
Another question is, does your data set also include individual economic characteristics? Because I guess here you're testing more, this is more of a test of sociotropic economic voting, meaning you test vote intentions against economic measures of economic aggregates.
Yeah.
Right. So you can also test like pocketbook voting, right? In the sense that whether one person is already unemployed or what's maybe the change in income or something for one particular individual. So there's a difference there.
Yeah. Basically, what you need there is individual level data, right?
Mm-hmm. You don't have it.
No, we don't have it. Polling companies don't give that to us. They charge us.
Mm-hmm.
Time is difficult.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that myself, I fail to see any paradox, because if you think about it, when money stops flowing, then people withdrew their support. So there's nothing exceptionally strange about that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that it seems that there's this huge elephant in the room, and when you choose to describe corruption or clientelism as potential parts of the problem, I think that's a misunderstatement, an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
Because I actually did my master's thesis on corruption in Greece and clientelism. So, and I mean, it doesn't take a master's degree, but many people would say, Greeks at least, would say that clientelism and corruption are the issue in Greece, and they're not something different from the economy, so you cannot distinguish between the both, between these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that we should focus more on what, like many people pointed out, that we should focus more on what kind of economy we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And to compare Greece to Britain seems a bit overstretched, I'd say. Because even under a Labour government, I would imagine that Britain is still a free market economy, whereas that's not the case in Greece, even
mm-hmm.
under a right wing government. So.
I totally agree with that. Sorry.
Like if I could bring up an example, you talked about unemployment and you use it as an important index. As far as I'm concerned, I don't care if unemployment might spike because people money could flow under the table and trickle down the economy in other ways. So I think there are many aspects that are kind of problematic.
Because we're rapidly running out of time, why don't we collect a few questions and allow Spiro to answer whichever ones he wants to and avoid the ones he doesn't want to answer.
Just, I wasn't preparing a UK in Greece, I'm just pointing out that, you know, the paradox is not unique.
Mm.
But I mean, my problem, it was really, somebody else raised it behind here, it's how you define economic voting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an umbrella expression, and it's composed of several different components, inflation, unemployment, you've mentioned, and obviously if inflation gets out of control, it'll be the dominant factor in people's mind, what they're paying in the shops, etc., etc. But if you're looking at the last quarter, I mean, what's dominated, certainly media coverage here, and you know, I'm a total layman as far as Greece is concerned, although I have a bit of knowledge about it because I'm a layman, but the point is, what's dominated is the bailout, and the appearance of obviously Germany dictating the conditions of bailout, and how the Greek politicians have reacted to Germany's pressure And so, you know, that, in a sense, could explain why, you know, that particular part of the economy definition could be the uppermost in people's minds. I mean, in the sense of national sovereignty, not only being impinged upon, but the Greek politicians are the main ones surrendering to that.
Yeah.
Do you take absence into account? I can't see any column says I'm not going to vote for him.
Yeah, these are basically just to.
Any final question, anybody? No? Okay, off you go.
I'll start with the last one because I have it here. Basically, these are the projections from the metric analysis when we exclude abstention, blind ballots, and the labor matter. The actual level of support in the actual data here is 11% for Kasoki and 18.8% for New Democracy.
How much is the absence from your
number? I don't know. If you can go to the website.
The states elected the second government of Bush with 49% of active people, so it does matter.
I think it plays a very important role. It could be that alienation actually needs only a few people to hold governments accountable.
Mm.
And this is an important aspect of it. Though we cannot control in the time series framework, we cannot control about it, as you understand, because we don't have an estimate of probability of voting in the next general election. But it would be great if we didn't have that. The other thing, basically, there is a German dictating what we're going to be doing in terms of economic policy. Right? Not a German, don't put it like this. There is a troika, there is a number of people that suggest that we should do this, this, and that. And if you don't do it, we don't give you any money. It's not very nice as a scheme and everything.
It's perceived as German.
Definitely, I agree with you. The thing is that this makes this thing apparent. I mean, how can you blame the Greeks for something the Germans are doing? Of course, I understand how, but that's the main idea. The globalization hypothesis suggests that if you don't have room to maneuver your national economy...
But it's not about globalization. It's about those politicians who invite the Germans to dictate what we
should. Of course, that's what we see. But why should it be related to the economy? That's the question.
Because unemployment, while you know,
so then you go with more
austerity.
I agree, but that's my story.
No. Unemployment goes up, and then the Greek politicians invite the Germans to dictate, and then people are dissatisfied with Greek politicians, and unemployment goes up, and other things happen as well, and they may be correlated, but spuriously, you know, there's no causally.
It could be that it's not causally. And this is one aspect of the whole thing. And I said that we might need more data there to see whether it's actual something about the real economic indicators or not. And to your question, of course corruption is part of the story. Of course, what we see about the economy doesn't take into account corruption. When we say that unemployment is 18.8, it doesn't say 18.8 plus corruption, plus black money, plus whatever. It's there. What we want to see here, and this is part of the whole interaction, is that basically what we see in our houses as the level of the economy, whether it relates to our decision to support one of the parties, right? And if unemployment increases, theory suggests, the economic voting theory suggests that there should be a decline in party support for the government of this. Of course, corruption is a very important part of the story. For other projects, I guess, it should be the main focus. We shouldn't be caring about democratic interactions. But I think it is, I think I made it clear, this whole thing is the best that we can do with the data that we have. And hopefully, actually tried for some time to find estimates of corruption or things that would vary by quarter, and of course, it's very difficult to find who would claim that he's corrupted. At the end of the day.
There are data.
Okay, hang on, wait. Can we have two last comments? Because these are colleagues from Hellenic Observatory, and they'll never speak to me again if I don't allow them time.
Okay, just one last comment.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most interesting and exciting part about your research is that you have managed to quantify the turning point in the history of Greek society plus economy. I'm sure that many other variables could be included, but what you have done is to quantify this turning point, and I think that this is the most important thing. That's all.
Mm.
Just very quickly, that there are measurements about black market economy, and there are measurements about corruption as well. And in the last 10 years, there has been a proliferation of this type of academic activity. So I would think that if you wanted, you could add it to your model. And another very last point, there is an extensive literature from Greek political scientists about voting intentions. And I would think that it would be appropriate to include some of their findings from Bulgaris, from Nikolakopoulos, from all sorts of people.
Since you're in neighboring offices, perhaps you could share this information.
Yeah. First of all, I mean, Hansi, we need to wait a bit to see whether there is a turning point. I'm not saying that there is a turning point. I think that it could be one. And we need to wait a bit to see actually something will change. my speculation is that nothing is going to change and we're going to return to how we were in the past. Even though I'm generally an optimist, in terms of voting, I think that people are going to be the same after the crisis is done. But the measures, they're not quarterly. I haven't found quarterly. If I find it, it's going to be great. But they're annual data, which basically would say that I only have 12 time points, basically 11 time points, but we cannot estimate a lot of stuff. What you could do, of course, is make up data in response to those 12 time points, which we generally don't know as a strategy. Well, we might be.
Before thanking Spiros and releasing you, could I just make a couple of announcements of forthcoming events? Next week, on Monday the 5th of March, we have our annual Hellenic Observatory lecture. This is the 12th in the series of our annual lectures. The title of the lecture is Greece Between Austerity, Reform and the Drachma. Not provocative at all. our annual lecture this year is Professor Kostas Azaliadis from Washington University in St. Louis. The lecture takes place in the New Theatre at 6:30 on Monday evening, so please do come along if you're interested in continuing to discuss some of these themes that have been elaborated on tonight. And we have a second event next week, which has been advertised quite widely, and we do encourage you to come and join in. And that is a workshop on social change, which is on Friday the 9th of March, organized by our colleague Athanasia Galeri, and including colleagues both from the LSE and the Department of Sociology at Manchester University. And you can find out all the relevant information from the Hellenic Observatory website. Spiro, obviously you haven't begun to do your formal work on this yet because you only started with us on Thursday. So this is a work in progress. Thank you very much for sharing some of this with us now. As you can see, you've stimulated a wide-ranging debate, both positive and negative. So there's things that you need to take away on both sides of the equation. And thank you very much.